What was I thinking? This isn't Disney. I'm way off script and losing the plot. Things don't work out that way. I'm not McConaughey turning the charm on, calling the shots. If this was a movie, maybe she would be willing to share my world. I'm starting to realize sometimes the nice guys don't always get the girl. 'Cause no one ever tells you when you're young. Life's not like the books, the films, or the songs.
I'm ready with my glass up, Mr. DeMille.
Oh, pretty soon, Eddie. We're going to be breaking out the camera soon, man. You better be ready for that. You haven't. When was the last time? I guess you do for Dirty 20, right?
Yeah.
You do that like every... So you've played with your Black Magic a ton, at least.
Mm.
Oh, all right. Well, we're just sitting here, and it's not as freezing in the offices of...
It's not.
Not as it normally is. There's no wind today. When you have wind in this house, it just rips through it.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, what are you guys talking about?
What are you guys talking about?
Well, welcome everybody to What Are You Guys Talking About? Another episode. We're on 107, I believe. And this is like, wait, it's Christmas.
That's right.
Are you in the Christmas spirit now?
I am now.
Are you, like, properly?
It definitely helped to kickstart the... Because, okay, so I'll tell you... like how I ended up going to what I, you know, went to later. But I, after I watched Land of the Apocalypse, I wanted to watch Hawkeye because I know it's very Christmassy and stuff like that.
It is, it is.
But I got kind of sidetracked, and which we will talk about.
We will.
But no, it's, yeah, it's definitely kind of.
I'm just wondering, you know. Christmas this year for me, because of all this COVID fuckering and all this other stuff, it does feel a bit like a kid on a wobbly bike. Like,
yeah.
I feel very Christmassy for like 10 minutes and then turn on the news and I'm like, oh man.
Yeah,
like,
that'll do it.
You know what I
reality.
Mean?
Like, it's just hard.
And it's weird because I didn't feel as much that way last year. Last year, I mean, Christmas was weird last year because everything got cancelled.
Mm.
But I think it's because I knew that all up front. And so it was like, we just always had to like, oh, we're having Christmas at home bit.
Mm.
And we kind of got together with all that. And it was, it felt very Christmas. I remember watching Die Hard with the wife and doing lots of Christmassy stuff. Where this time around, I'm like, I'm doing Christmas stuff, but I'm like, hope Christmas still
you can see the clouds.
Yeah, like, and it's just like, oh, I don't have a January lockdown on the back of this Christmas.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's gonna happen.
I know. At any rate, but Merry Christmas, everybody. Welcome to the
hopefully you're curled up with a hot cocoa listening to the dulcet tones.
Yeah, for any of the apocalypse too, that better be a spiked hot cocoa.
Yes.
that's one thing we'll talk about. But it is, I was telling my wife, who has not actually seen the musical, my wife loves musicals. We managed, thanks to her daughter, she's now managed to kind of get into the swing of things with musicals, where she used to hate them.
Mm-hmm.
But this is definitely one I thought she would like, because it follows the format of some of some of the classes we had. We'll talk about that in first impressions. Let me quickly just do what we normally do going through this, though. You know, you're listening to a lot of Victoria Productions talk basically about things we like that we're watching, things that are kind of classic to us, things that influence our writing, things that influence our production, but just giving you an inside glimpse of two filmmakers and their studio and how we put things together. So if you want to check us out, the easiest way and the best way is our website, which is www.lovevictoriaproductions.com. But we're also available on Facebook, where you can check out Jason Chereau or Edward Burgos, also available with Love Victoria Productions as a Facebook page. We're on Instagram with Jazzy J. Chereau and Anano LVP. We're on Twitter with @MouthLoveVictoria and @AnanoskiProd. We're on TikTok with @LVPFilmLife. And finally, we're also on LinkedIn with a company page. As I said, I'm always amazed at the 9 subscribers. I think we went up to 10 subscribers last week. So whoever additionally came onto LinkedIn and thought, huh, that's all right. But you can check out the Love Victoria page, which has all the postings. We post every Dirty 20. We post every one of our podcasts that we do. As I said, we're up to 107.
Mm.
You know, and we try to talk about the other things we're working on too on this podcast and otherwise. There will be some stuff hopefully coming from us in the summer. If I ever get that USB out to Will, then we'll also have a trailer for Prisoner 187. Or 817, sorry. Not wait, 187. It's not Prisoner Murder. But yeah, that's kind of the skivvy with it. So moving on into what we're working on at the moment. Maybe we start with that, just to get that over with real quick. Only because it's on my mind. I am knee deep in about 4 scripts at the moment. 5 scripts, really. But we're trying to get, and I've also come up with a business plan on how I like to get all this done. So at the moment, we've shifted the gear at LVP into TV shows. The main one that's going to be filmed first is a game store TV show, which I keep telling everybody I've nearly got this one, and I really do. It's just a matter of kind of finishing up that third act into something I liked. The part Ed didn't write yet, so otherwise it's been very quick because I just took what Ed wrote and added to it. And it was,
I mean, the hardest part I didn't do.
No, it's absolutely fine. But once that's done, we're looking to, you know, the other thing I'm doing right now is kind of rallying all the actors and actresses. So if you are one of our regular cast or crew members that we work with and you're hearing this, get in touch because we are going to start shooting stuff soon. So I am rallying people. If you haven't heard from me, you will be doing so. That's kind of the focus at the moment. In the background, we still have the feature film, of course, to work on. But like we said, we're kind of pushing that. Because that's what the producer over at Atlanta wanted to do, so we're kind of focusing on something different. But other than that, I think that's pretty much what we're doing. We've got some commercial work coming up, which we'll talk about once it's done. And yeah, anything else anybody's working on or wants us to work on, then please, by all means, get in touch. We do have probably a little space to get things in for people if you need crew or whatever on your projects there. But you need to get a hold of me now, because I'm going to start booking in people for doing these things, and I want to make sure we get them done. Anyways, without boring you further with the production schedule of LVP, first impressions, Ed. Anna the Apocalypse, who is this for, and who is this not for?
Well, I pondered this as I was watching it, because it is your favorite question, and it's a toughie, I think, because I think it has such earnestness to it, and it touches on some very, I think, important stuff that needs to be discussed for young people, you know. But then it's also like a horror movie with some gore. But I think it's light enough that it's kind of an easy entry for someone, you know, even if they're not like crazy about horror and
this that is the thing. Kind of thing. I'm a bit surprised by your response because of the Shaun of the Dead aspects of this, I really thought you would jump on this one because it had that realistic zombie in England and Scotland.
And I did absolutely love that. I think where I'm not the kind of target audience, whereas I was for Shaun of the Dead, is I feel that this is for young people today.
Well, and let's talk about it a bit. So this is kind of the problem. I think everyone that's able to should watch End of the Apocalypse because it's a bit of a mixed bag to begin with. I love it, but that's because it somehow puts together all the elements in a way that I like them. Mm-hmm. The elements are what people would be attracted to on this, and they're spread out, I guess is what I'm saying. If you are a fan of musicals, especially things like High School Musical or things like that, Glee, and you're old enough to watch this, that's the issue I had when I talked to my wife about it, was like, I'd love for my 7-year-old daughter to watch this, but this is totally inappropriate for her at the moment.
Right.
I have to get at least 3 years, if not another 7. You know? Like, it's just really grim at times. Yeah. And that was, you know, without ruining it for you, it is a zombie apocalypse movie. Mm-hmm. And so
a really good one
that takes place during Christmas. It's like, if you can handle all of that together, which I can, because it doesn't ruin my Christmas to think of a zombie apocalypse, then by all means. But if the idea that you're going to have a celebration for Christmas but then have to watch some of the cast members die because you're in a zombie whatever, then no, this isn't for you. And that's why I just wanted to put that in the first impressions, like, okay, Christmas warmer, but it's not like Gremlins where everybody's going to be happy at the end. Like, now this one, I think it's why it didn't achieve kind of the mass popularity I sometimes think it should have had, is because it gets kind of dark at times.
Yeah.
And it's not like Walking Dead kind of dark, but
no.
And it's very much High School Musical kind of dark.
Yeah.
But in the same, very same sense, there are moments when you're not really supposed to laugh. Like, it's not funny, it's more sad than anything else. And there are a few of those, especially towards the end.
And like I said, it's also quite earnest. Like, the songs are about, like, you know, very real thing.
I
really enjoyed
the
lyrics and stuff like that. It was a great musical. It was a great zombie movie, you know?
And a great Christmas movie.
Yeah, and a great Christmas movie.
Because this is the other thing. Like, if you can handle both those first two things, then this is like nativity-style Christmas movie. It has that panache. It has that kind of polish. That's why, I was always surprised this didn't have more mass appeal.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like Love Actually. It looks like, you know, all these English, British, because this is a Scottish film, not an English film, British, you know, Christmas classics that come out. I just thought it fit right into that one.
Yeah.
However, like I said, the only way you'll catch it on TV is on like Film 4.
Yeah.
You know, which is where, as I said, we'll talk about this in the bigger, deeper dive, but it really, this is one that I saw it when it came out and I just loved it, but I think that's why people really haven't seen this one aside from, it's the funniest thing. I'm going to post this into the Fright Fest group on Facebook, because normally I'd be like, you guys should check this out, but there's not going to be one person in that group that hasn't seen it already. Yeah. And it's kind of funny that way. But people outside the Fright Fest group, like, I don't know anyone else who's actually seen this.
I kind of can't believe I hadn't heard about it.
Right. Yeah, like, do you know what I mean? Like, when I gave it to you, I was like, oh my God, like, this is one that everybody really should watch. Like, there may be parts that you say, oh, I'm not really keen on that.
Yeah, but or it might not really kind of, you might feel like me that you're not the target audience, but it's really enjoyable.
Yeah, really, and really well done. Yeah. Like, that's the whole package is there.
And I think that it walks a very fine line, because it is a lot of stuff going on, you know? And it never kind of goes too far with anything, I think, you know? No. Yeah,
I
did enjoy it. I did really enjoy it.
We would encourage all. Like, definitely, this is not one where I normally say turn off the podcast if you don't like it. Just watch it. It's only an hour and a half and anyway.
I can totally imagine how this would go to the top of a lot of people's lists of like Christmas movies.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You know? It just, to me, it's like one of those cheap thrills Christmas movies. Like, guys, just put it on while you're putting up Christmas presents or something. If you can be, again, reminding it's a zombie apocalypse. Right. So, you know, not if you're incredibly conservative, then you probably aren't listening to the show regularly anyway. But do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just saying, like, if Blood and Guts is going to put you off, then no. But otherwise, unless Blood and Guts is your issue, and you know you can't stand like an episode at all of The Walking Dead, then well, watch this.
Or maybe if you hated Glee and High School Musical like with a passion.
That's the thing, that was the whole thing when it came out, because it said Fright Fest crew. There are a plethora, if not a multitude, in that group that cannot stand musicals. Right. They were all cheering.
That's awesome.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, I totally hear what you're... And I'm always contradicting you, aren't I, Ed? But, you know, musicals, if you can't stand them, this may get you into them. You know, if you like zombie films, but you don't like musicals, I can picture this one getting you into it. So anyways, that's first impressions. Go away, watch it, you know, come back. But Ed wanted to talk a little bit. I'm going to start with Eddie because he had a big one to talk about this week. But what have you been watching?
So I finally got round to one of your recommendations, which you've been talking about for weeks now, but Dope Sick.
Okay.
And oh, it's so good. It's funny though, because I watched Anna the Apocalypse. I was in a quite Christmassy mood, and I was like, oh, I might just watch the first episode of Hawkeye, you know, get a bit more in the mood. And then I saw Dope Sick, and then I was like, oh, you know what? Jason's been telling me about it for a long time. I need to watch this. I need to watch Swagger. Okay, let me watch one episode.
I do know what you mean. It's just, you gotta be... And this is because I do spend... It's funny, because I don't even really play video games anymore, because I'm just that obsessed now with writing. If I'm not making something, I'm watching something, because it feeds one, feeds off the other right now. So... But I have my moods, because I'm writing. So yesterday, because I had a little bit of free time in the evening, like... Yesterday was like, let's put on lots of Watchmen because I needed to write something serious and about love. And that is, you know, the latter half of Watchmen is like my greatest diatribe on love. And you'll get into that. We listen to the 2.5 hour podcast. I might have mentioned that. But it's just in my mood. But man, like, I'm a gushy motherfucker through all of this. Like, my wife will ask me something. She's like, what's wrong with you?
Is this Dope Sick?
No, this is like Watchmen. And because I watch it and I get in like the mood to write something like that. But then like you could, you know, poke me with a twig and it's like, and I'm just all over the place. Same thing with Dope Sick. Like you watch that movie long enough, like the world does start to suck.
So, but it's, I don't know, I think maybe I'm more in that kind of mood than like Christmassy fun mood. Even though, like I say, Anne and the Apocalypse definitely kickstarted me.
Sorry, I'm so long-winded with what I say, but that's exactly what I mean. Because right now, I think everyone, and I only know for myself, but I think everyone's got a little bit of the training wheels and the bicycles.
Yeah.
Okay, because things are looking a bit weird right now with Christmas. You know, everybody's like, I can't hang out with my friends because I want to be able to go see my family over Christmas. Totally read you, by the way, for all of you, you know, they've been contacting me with stuff, and I'll just say stuff because I have so many different engagements that are either canceled or being moved. Like, don't worry. Everybody's worrying, panicking, like, your family comes first, guys. Like, we'll catch up and party in January, all right? Like, I'm not worried. I'm perpetually around a party. That's the sad thing about me, right? So, but that's what I meant. Like, it'll wobble you. You know, if you were in the good mood, like, something like Dope Sick is a tragic look at the world. And
so good, though.
How many have you watched so far?
I'm just starting on the third one.
Okay.
What a cast. And Jesus Christ. What a cast.
Yes. So, I mean, first and foremost, why Dope Sick is I think, so good, you know, is because they managed to get some really important actors in there, like Michael Keaton, mm-hmm. like Rosario Dawson, and the salesman. I was going to ask you, because you'll remember who that is now. Do you remember the kid that plays the salesman?
Yes.
Who he is?
Coulter, is it Michael Coulter? Will Poulter.
Will Poulter,
who's from, he was in the Ari Aster.
That's right, he plays the dickhead.
Yes,
you know.
Beautifully. And he's great in this. Great in this.
Rosario Dawson. I said, you're only on episode two, mate. Yeah. Like, that's what the other thing about Dope Sick that really does well is that it changes a lot as you move along. Now, I'm not just... you're only saying this because you're on episode eight and I'm on episode two. But
was this the one that you're talking about where they keep changing the timeline?
It is. And it's not the only one that's doing that. Because obviously before we were chasing a book deal for somebody that did that in their book, and I was like, it drove me nuts that you did this. And this is another one where I'm just... Yeah. It starts to make a little bit more sense. What they're doing at the moment, I'm just not keen on it, if I'm honest. Mm-hmm. What certain writers and maybe directors and filmmakers in general are doing is they're taking a narrative and they're saying, and I guess book writers, because we're talking about a book writer as well, people are taking a narrative and then rejigging. It's not even Quentin Tarantino anymore. Mm-hmm. Whereas Quentin Tarantino did it like an epic, in medio res, I'm going to show you this, and I'm going to jump here, and I'm going to jump there. Here, they're like, I want to tell you a story, but if I told it to you in order, it won't make as much sense or seem as cool. So I'm going to mix up the order a little bit, and that way it's more dynamic to you.
Yeah.
While I appreciate that, it's like...
Yeah.
What are we really talking about here? Like, I can't tell, are we being successful with fighting OxyContin? Are we not successful?
It's distracting,
and it's like taking you from two different eras for that, and it's like... The false impression that it's giving you is that we won the war on OxyContin because it keeps going to this.
Right.
Let me tell you about the war on OxyContin. And sorry, I do have to rant about this because it is very close to my home. But OxyContin was superseded by phenytoin. Okay? And phenytoin was the same fucking thing. One drug made by one company that has managed to basically, you know, give addiction status to one out of every three people that I know back home. It's just ridiculous. And OxyContin was the one who started that. Now they're going to... The problem is the show tries to say, we put those people in jail. Like, you did.
Yeah,
and then another group of pharmaceutical people came out and basically take everybody's life using the same tactics.
Yeah.
You know, the whole, like, was... Phenytoin was originally prescribed to cancer patients. So, that being said, this is the first time I have seen anyone look at the ghetto. The new ghetto.
Right.
We had this big uproar about crack in the 80s in the ghettos. Like, this is exactly what has happened in the Midwest where I grew up.
And they actually call it out in one of the episodes.
I think so. The writer is either clearly from there or understands. That's what it did. It took neighborhoods that were good and turned them into very bad places.
It destroyed communities.
Because people rob, steal, and do whatever to get this drug. Because, and again, the other reason I was really happy with it, and sorry, I've kind of stolen this off of you, but when we talked about it with you, the portrayal of addiction is accurate. Accurate. I fight... with so many people. Many because they think I had a wild past, and so I know all this from that. Like, it's really not like that, guys. It's more that I had friends. Lost some, but others I haven't lost. Like, that I understand what addiction is.
And that was, like, right in our kind of, you know, when we were high school age and
absolutely.
Stuff like that.
Absolutely. And it's like, people do not understand that, you know, addiction like this is not a crime. It's an
illness.
It's a huge illness. And it exists in lots of people. It's just some people get triggered by this. Once you are on the drug, it is way more than an illness. It is, you know, you are having chemical rewiring of your brain. And so that's what I mean. Like, people should watch this to understand why it's a problem. Why just because a doctor prescribes it, and what, you know, the benefit you have with stuff like this is it will show you why when you go to your counter in the NHS, they will not give you certain drugs without anything, why they are adamant about it. And they talk about it. You'll see in a couple episodes, they'll talk about Germany.
They'll
start teaching you a little bit about this is why it's like this nowhere else but America. You know what I mean? It's at least for the Western world. And so... you know, it's why it's such a prominent... But, sorry, getting off my soapbox and back onto the floor as to why this is good. I mean, what other aspects of this show?
Well, I've had a bit of a penchant for... I like that word, penchant.
I like it.
For...
Penchant.
for kind of these shows on Netflix where they follow, like, addicts, dealers, and cops.
Right.
Like, in the same show, they'll sometimes pick a city, and they'll, you know...
A.K.A. The Wire, done a different way.
Right, but, like, you know, reality TV,
yes,
right?
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And so you see, like, you know, some of these communities that are just desperate, you know, because of what's going on. And yet, in kind of popular media, yeah, there have been some episodes of CSI where there's like the Oxy dealer, you know, who's usually like a rich kid who's stealing it from their parents, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And there's been a few things like that, but never like a really kind of honest portrayal of it. And even to the point that on what's the comedy with the scientist nerds? Big Bang Theory, thank you. So the main character in that, the girl, Penny, she becomes a drug rep.
Okay.
And it's like, hey, it's a sitcom, isn't it funny that she flirts with doctors and tries to sell them? And I'm like, that's not funny at all.
No, that's, I mean,
pretty goddamn awful.
It's a pretty big divide in the world with that. You know, Americans, you know, speaking as a, you know, I'm not an ex-American. I still have my passport and, you know, all that good stuff. But, you know, I've definitely come to the other side when it comes to healthcare. And I actually fight quite adamantly for the NHS in this country.
As imperfect as it is.
Exactly. It's just, you guys, you really want your health decided by who thinks they can make the most money off of it? Like, that just, don't get me wrong.
And it's scary as well because the doctors get like, you know, they almost like get hacked, right?
Like, well, you know, pretentious Jason, right? I get asked this a couple of times, you know, every decade is, why didn't you become a doctor? You're really smart. You learn really quickly and you seem to like biology. Mm. I didn't become a doctor, guys, because like when I was a punk rocker in high school, the thought disgusted me of being rich. And because doctors in America are rich, like you have to pay, you know, they have to pay back all these student loans. But after they're minted for life. But in the same sense, like, it just didn't seem right because you see all this profiteering and stuff that goes on. Mm-hmm. Didn't know you could come over to England and then get paid nothing to do the same thing. But, do you know what I mean? It just makes me laugh just thinking of that. But that was, like, a big thing to me back when I was communist Jason, you know, and it was like, I won't work for, you know, something that exploits people's health.
I mean, you saw it as almost like an evil when you were young, you know?
I did. You know, I grew up in an upper middle class community, so I would have seen people that had money for healthcare and things like that. But I also had a sister in entertainment, and Nikki, you know, bless her, she never had health insurance. And so, man, she'd get sick, goes to the clinic, and it's like $150 just to, you know, clean up something easy. And that kind of stuff used to get me. And I also had, you know, my mom was very big on showing me, you know, the
she poor... She was a nurse as well, right? Your mom?
No, my mom was a teacher.
Oh, a teacher, sorry.
But she would take me around to, like, soup kitchens and stuff like that. Yeah. And she, you know, her and her husband, my stepfather, Peanut, are very big on educating me about what I didn't see because I was an upper-middle-class rich kid. And so they took me to these places. And then you meet homeless people, and you meet people that can't get healthcare. And all of a sudden, you're like, this system is completely broken. Mm. Like, no one... This doesn't work. Like, people are dying for no reason. And I'm sorry, but it works over here. You know, I have a father-in-law in the hospital at the moment, which sucks, and I hope he gets better, knock on wood. I'll knock lightly this time for you.
That's all right. So I don't have the headphones.
Oh, okay. But you know what I mean? Like, and it stinks that he has to wait and all the delays and things like that. But I tell you, it's still, there's that fear you have of being like, am I going to be able to afford getting sick? Am I ever going to do this? Like, as a diabetic, you know, you and I both, like, that is one of those big ones of like, can I afford all my medication? You know, can I afford the surgeries because they're more expensive because we're diabetics? Like, this is what I mean. So, Dope Sick is a good highlight as to how that system got broken and why it's broken. Mm. Because that drug was just pushed on everybody. Man, everybody had someone with an Oxy addiction. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? As I said, now it's fentanyl. Mm. And it's just, watch the show. That's what I mean. It'll make you feel better about the NHS.
And then, obviously, like, it's a really interesting topic and it's an important one to discuss and stuff. But like I say, you know, the performances, the camera work, it's all very prestige TV.
Sorry, I did that twice. Like, I got back up on the soapbox after I said I was getting off of it. So sorry, guys. It's just because this is from my hometown. Like, this is real. This is something I can tell you about because I have friends that has affected. But no, the reason to watch Dope Sick, even if you didn't care about any of that, because God knows, guys, you know what I mean? You can just have coffee with me and tell you the whole fucking thing anyway, right? But watch it because it's a good show. Mm. Like, it's just well made. I love the blending of, like, this is the first time in a long time they have shown Christian Americans the way they really are. One of my biggest pet peeves about the current portrayal, because we get plenty of views of the liberal side of my country. You know, we get plenty of New Yorks and, you know, look at all the freaks and weirdos in New York. It's like, yes, You can do anything you want in New York and California. Mm. Like, it's awesome. Mm. And don't get me wrong, I lean that way. That's me. Yeah, yeah, that's definitely, you know, where I'm at. But I grew up in a place where people are way different from that. And they're always portrayed, just because we had the Trump era, and we still kind of have the Trump era, mm-hmm. as these, like, assholes. And, like, man, they always believe this conservative shit. Yeah, they don't care about anything. It's like, nah, it's not really like that. Yeah. Like, it's more small towns that use religion to make sure everybody can keep their brain straight. You know what I mean? Like, religion's just simpler. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I just love the portrayal, because it showed these people that are, like, they're not... You know, even the father, you know, one of the best ones, the father and the girl.
He's fantastic. He's one of my guys.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
One of your B characters that you're like, I follow him. I know him.
He was in Hell on Wheels. He played Preacher in that. And, oh, it's fantastic. The whole cast, everyone is like, again, it feels like this is going to win some Emmys, right? This has to win some stuff.
From Keaton's performances alone.
Like, and Rosario Dawson, man, boy, can she do, like, hard... You know, disgruntled. I didn't realize this is the thing.
Like, I have been a Rosario Dawson fan, and I'm sure loads of other people would say this too. But honestly, like, I have loved her since kids. She was brilliant in that, and then she kind of jumped. I didn't know if she was going to go the Chloe Sevigny way, because Chloe Sevigny has been more indie. She does a couple. She's American Horror Story, but tends to only do really weird kind of indie bits. And Rosario went the other way, and every time you'd see her, it'd just be really impressive.
And yet
her only thing is she doesn't age. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? She's been around now for like 20 years. Yeah. And like, you know, I wish I looked that good, Rosario. You call me up, you tell me your secrets.
And she seems to do like a really good variety of, like, you know, prestige kind of films with like incredible directors. She's fantastic in 25th Hour with Spike Lee and stuff. And then also, like, MCU stuff. And,
that's right. And we like her because she's like us. We are eclectic when it comes to our love of things. And you made me more like that. Because when I met Ed, it was very much horror is my specialty. I know other things and I like film, but horror is the one I can tell. And nowadays, like, it's just kind of weird. You know, I have to brag. I have to... It's not humble brag. I don't know. I hate that term. What does that mean? What does that
it's something
mean?
That you never do.
Exactly.
You just,
like,
you
there's
just
no
brag.
Such fucking thing anyway as a humble brag. A humble brag is like, no offense, but it's something a passive aggressive person comes up with.
It's something that I do.
So they can be like, 100%. But he's calling it a humble brag is passive aggressive. It's not humble.
Yeah,
like, it's a brag.
100%.
So my brag. All right. So I was sitting with my poor wife, who was putting together videos for the Christmas pageant because everybody's got COVID right now. No one can film shit, so she had to do it all. And man, like, I warned her, because she had like four different performances, and then it's like they couldn't find an editor. She's like, I'm gonna edit them, and Ed's just giving me the look, because this is the same conversation he's had with me dozens of times now. And I was like, Becky, and she's like, yeah. he knows the tone.
I wish I'd have been there.
She was quite receptive. It was okay. It wasn't. You wish you could have been there had she not been receptive.
No. I wish I could have been there to see you be like, well, listen, you've got to not be overambitious, and it's going to take time.
Yeah. Because, I mean, she was, you know, first 10 minutes of anybody editing, they're already swearing at the screen. You're like,
you pull your hair out.
You're like, listen,
how do
like,
I do this really
editing
simple,
is,
stupid
and what
shit.
I was telling her, I was like, the worst thing for me is because I have this day job and I have these other things I have to do. And it's not just the day job, guys. It's all the things in my life, because editing is that job that you need the room for the day. And you have to lock yourself away. As I said, I'd let maybe something to do in retirement or something, because you just have to have the headspace focused in on what you're doing. And it's really tedious, because first she was like, so I have to label everything and then move it. I'm like, yeah, you have to always do that in editing. Otherwise, you never know what you're working with. She's like, then I have to arrange it and everything. I'm like, yep, that's the process. The cool thing was, you know, she'd been around us so much, or she just is that smart. She knew the process. She's like, I've got to label it all. Then I've got to put it in order. And then I've got to cut out the things I don't need. I'm like, yep. She's like, that's going to take forever. And I'm like, yep. So, you know, the first day working like 7 hours on it, it was like, okay, see what I mean? But then she had the problem. Here's where the brag comes in. Then she had the problem. It won't let me keep working when I don't have any disk space. Mm. And I was like, ah, the next problem in editing. Mm. The massive amounts of disk space that you need.
Yeah.
So it basically, I mean, she uses iMovie, which, you know, I kind of laughed about it. So you do have Final Cut, because she's on my phone.
Yeah.
So she could use my software. She was on iMovie, but I showed her how to take... was I copied the iMovie library onto a hard drive so she could start using the hard drive and have enough space again. It's just that moment, because editing breaks you, and she had been broken, and so the look on her face when I did this, you would have thought like I just bought her a diamond ring. You know what I mean? She was like, how did you do that? And I'm like, it's okay, it's done now, you can use it for that. So, brag moment. I was like, And for 5 seconds, I was a real video person. In the room, I was a real filmmaker, as opposed to that guy that just sits at his computer all day.
But yes, Dopesick is dope.
Dope.
I'm gonna probably devour it today and tomorrow.
Yeah, I know it's new episodes every Wednesday, and I don't think they've come to the end of it yet. So.
And I feel like it's gonna want to make me want to watch The Morning Show season 2.
You haven't watched Morning Show season 2
not
yet?
No. Screwed. I've been saving it.
Oh, mate. Yeah, and then you gotta get on to Swagger.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot to watch.
I just hate this because I sit here and I'm like, I do work a lot, guys. Like, a lot. Like, ridiculous amounts. Yeah,
no, it's, you know, I commute. Right?
I was gonna say, you work at a store and I work at home, so I'm hoping, because otherwise I'm like, no, really? Like,
no, because there was a time.
I just had this conversation with somebody, like, no, I sleep like 4.5 hours a night now because I've got so much to do.
Yeah. There was a time when we were watching kind of the same amount that in lockdown, furlough, you know.
And I'm writing. Like, writing requires this other thing. Top tips out there, guys. And, you know, I never like to tell anybody how to write, but I am going to tell you how to write. Like,
consume
while, you know, either before, during, or whatever you're writing. Like, I have to put myself in certain moods. I do it. It's become a formula now where I'll say, okay, this is what you're going to watch tonight because you want to be able to come out with some stuff that's going to say this, or something to inspire you with that. Like, it does work. You know, it's the Stephen King philosophy, and I do agree with it. You have to consume a ton and write a ton, and eventually that stuff will start looking good. Mm-hmm. I think with Stephen King, the thing that people misconstrue with that is because he publishes so much, you're like, oh, I have to make so much. Like, no.
Right.
Like, the problem I can tell with my own writing is that I'm working on, like, 5 scripts, throwing away parts, picking up scripts, you know. Mm. But that's where your progress gets slower because the actual thing you're working on you can do, but you're only going to get so far with that. And then you can either turn everything off or you can keep writing when you've got something in your
head.
There
comes a point where you kind of have to focus in. But there's definitely, you know, a lot of moments where you feel schizophrenic.
I think
so. And you're like working on 20 different things.
Yeah.
But so what did you watch then this week?
This week? What were some of the good ones this week? Well, Lost in Translation, I think, was the first one we talked about. Watched that this week. That was cool. That was good.
Yeah?
Then it was, yeah.
That's great. No, great film. Great film. I love Sofia Coppola. And, you know, that opening shot of...
Why is it the opening shot? I was thinking it's the closing shot. The person I was talking to said the opening shot. It's just her ass, right?
Beautiful.
Though. Oh, my God.
It's a thing of beauty.
It's only because I kept talking about the closing shot with somebody, and then they brought up the opening shot, and I couldn't remember it. And then I had to go back, and all it was her ass. And I'm like, that's the shot we're talking about? Like, fuck.
I think that shot launched Scarlett Johansson's career.
Why, though? That's what I don't understand. It's just, like...
Because...
I think of so many other reasons she is amazing.
100%.
Yes, she has a wonderful ass.
But, you know, in Hollywood, sex sells. Okay. Right?
Okay.
And, you know, I think that she had... And she has everything.
Was that like her Anya Taylor-Joy moment? Because Anya Taylor-Joy has so many scenes where they're just showcasing the fact that she's gorgeous.
Yeah.
And they're like, by the way, this is a beautiful woman who's going to be on the screen for a long time for you.
100%.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then I think the fact that she was phenomenal, her performance was phenomenal in the film, helped a bit.
It'd actually been so long since I'd watched it. So
I haven't seen it in ages. Yeah, you Bill know, Murray, man.
I like said that's... at some point, we maybe do a podcast on it. Maybe in the future.
Yeah, maybe like the next top 10 that we've been talking about.
Yeah, we definitely go on that one. So watch that. And then, what were my other recommends this week that were good? Tomboy.
Oh, yes.
Came out of the blue because I kept trying to watch it. I was going to watch it one night, and then my sister called. And the funny thing is, like, my sister and I say goodbye to each other about a half hour after talking. 4 hours later, we actually get off the phone. So, didn't get to watch.
You do that with me a lot.
Oh, my God.
It's a Chereau trait, I think.
I just love talking. I'm sorry. Like, my connection with other people is, like, the biggest joy in my life. Like, when I can talk to people and they understand what I'm talking
about.
It's
okay, man. It's a lovable trait.
That's why I put extra... This is the podcast. This is me getting an extra 2 hours a week of talking and people understanding.
Putting words into people's ears.
Oh, my God. Is that shallow of me? I don't know.
No, it's
I'm
not.
I'm staring at my tea like...
No, it's not.
Is this what I've become?
No. You are the mouth.
All right.
You are the legend.
Mouth is appropriate, yeah. So, oh God. How did I get that nickname again?
It was Goonies.
That's right. Okay, good. Yeah. I forget sometimes that people are like, how did you get that nickname? I'm like, I never sucked anyone's dick if that's what you're asking. Mouth like a Hoover.
Yeah. So, Tomboy.
Tomboy. All right, so literally the day before, and it's good, the timing of this was really good, because on the Saturday, I'd read this article about BBC and Rosie Kay has left, you know, what dance troupe does she work for? One of the leading ones in the UK.
Is it like one of the celebrity dance?
I don't believe so. No, I think it's more like a Pineapple Studios. Gotcha, more like gotcha. More that she runs some really good dancers. Okay. But like, to me, like, some of her comments, like, okay, so the controversy with that, because that makes for an interesting discussion real quick.
There's recent news that came out today as well. About,
oh, okay, you can update me, because I haven't seen
it. Not on this, but on something else, but go on.
Good, we'll go with, because what happens, a news article came out, it was a J.K. Rowling, it's the easiest way I can say it, it's because she has said she's a proponent for women for safe spaces. And what that means is she argues that she does not agree that transgender women, you know, men who are identifying or transitioning or whatever it is, and I'm not the expert on this, but want to use female bathrooms, she finds that to be a violation and would rather have there be safe spaces. Mm-hmm. I believe the counter argument is, and again, I don't know any of this, so if you want to fill the comment section, feel free. Mm. It's just, I'm talking off the cuff here. Mm. But the argument against that is it leads to violence against trans people that have to use male bathrooms when they should be able to use...
Right.
You know, personal opinion, because it was going to get asked anyway. Like, personal opinion is, I don't care.
Right.
Like, I really don't care.
Yeah.
Like, it's the kind of thing that, to me, yeah, fine. Anybody can use any bathroom, whatever. Yeah. Like, let's do it. However, I'm not a woman. So I'm like, okay, people are entitled to their opinions on this. That's how Rosie K felt about it.
Yeah.
But that was not how her dance troupe felt about it. And so her dance troupe, she claims at least, pushed her out and has made her retire and said, like, you know, because she didn't have the correct views. And apparently on the evening, this was all discussed because this was like a COVID evening where she brought people over to feel better and was trying to like bond. She made other choice comments. So the debate ensued in my house because I don't always understand the backlash. I was like, it's just an opinion, right? Like, they're really mad at her for saying these things. But, you know, coming from a mixed race background, guys, like, people say shit about black people all the time. And it's like, if I really canceled every single person in my life that ever said a shitty thing about A, being black or being mixed race or, you know, one of those many things on that spectrum, to be honest, I never have any fucking friends. So I don't always understand, and I'm like, I don't get it. I don't understand that issue at all from a scientific standpoint, because I'm like, does it happen when you're young? My wife, who is an educator, knows about these things, tries to teach me, but it's one of those things that, like, it's difficult because you have your set mindset and you're trying to get there, but until you see examples, well, lo and fucking behold, Tomboy. French film, I don't remember the director. Part of the reason this was recommended to me was because of the director, and I'll just look it up while I'm talking here. But the movie follows, you know, it's a girl, a girl named Lore, and I'm going to ruin this slightly for you, but you should still watch it. 76 minutes, so this isn't going to take up ton of your time. But it follows a girl who's moving between, it's a slice of life kind of film. So, in other words, we're not going to have this, you know, and I like this, we're not going to have an epic story about a trans youth, you know, that's going to go on for 10 years. Now, this is literally, she's moved from one town, she's going to a new school, and it's the summer before she starts at the new school. And the key thing that happens that sets the whole thing in motion is she meets the new kids in the playground, she meets a girl, and they all start playing, and she goes as Michael, not Lore. And you can clearly see from the way she is that she identifies as male. You know what I mean? She has short hair, you know, and doesn't like wearing dresses. They made it very clear that's what it was. But my point with all of this, and cheers to, now I'm getting the director's name out here. Director was Celine Sciamma. So Celine Sciamma, I think, S-C-I-A-M-M-A. There we go. Listen, when you can showcase to me like this, it teaches me so much faster because it just took the issues right. It said, like, you know, obviously this all comes to a head and blah blah blah, but it said, like, it showed you why she's doing these things, and the worst thing is the things she has to go through to do those things. So one of the particularly, I think, ones that got me was she's playing Play-Doh with her sister and she wants to wear a swimsuit, but she was as a boy, so she doesn't wear a top, and she has to get, like, something to put in there because otherwise they'll know because it'll show. And, like, it just, it really went well. Ed. The other reason I think it worked well, Ed, and only the French can do this, I should say, only Europeans can do this, because we're still, I think, way too hopped up on sexuality with stuff. Is it was told from a child's perspective, putting in those elements of sexuality in there. And we're not talking about sex, we're talking about sexuality, you know what I mean? Like, gender. And so, that's what was interesting. They weren't afraid to say, to do, you know, and it just, oh, it was so slice of life, too. The interaction between The Girl and Her Sister is probably some of my favorite movies. She has this little sister that's like, and she has a pregnant mom as well. But the interactions with the sister are really the ones that just kind of show you, you know, loving the tenderness, the normalness of it all, versus this is what she has to go through, though, because this is who she wants to be, and no one understands that. That, to me, was all I needed. It was like, oh, so a person thinks the same way, you know, everything else the same, you know, but they just happen to be a person that was born this way but wants to be this way because they feel internally that way instead. Made perfect sense to me. And the way they demonstrated by, oh, they want to put on these clothes, not those clothes. I felt like an idiot because it was like, God, had I just seen this?
No, but we are victims of our time in certain respects. And lo and behold, what a surprise that, you know, a film that shows character and has a story and stuff educated you more than like a tweet from someone.
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people like. I think a lot of people resist nuance. They want to take a side. They want to be tribal, and they often want to go with what is the popular view of the time. Mm-hmm. You know. And this is why I think film can be a very powerful tool for helping people understand, like, other people's perspectives.
No, I mean, mark it here. That is part of my evolution as a filmmaker, because it comes from having been a lawyer before. I mean, I'm not registered anymore, but I'm still a lawyer. And that is how I lived my life, through argument, through didactic argument. That's how you're trained. And I can tell you, like, people enjoy having conversations with some people enjoy having conversations with me, because that's where you get further with a conversation. You have a didactic argument where you're looking at both the angles and moving it forward and saying, okay, we can agree these points, but we still don't understand these points. And then I met you. You show me Story of Film, which has a sequel now.
I saw your message. I was like, what the
It's so awesome. It's playing, I think, at the Curzon. Was it last Friday or this Friday?
Okay, so then it's playing on, like, at cinemas and stuff.
Yeah, for like, it's because it's like two 80-minute parts. Okay. So it's 160. I mean,
wicked.
Yeah, I'm not sure I could go see this in the cinema. But I'll call you over when it comes out on DVD and we can watch it. Updates us. It gets us from Pulp Fiction era to where we are. Which,
that's awesome.
So, yeah, if you love Mark Cousins and what he did for this. But that evolution, what Mark Cousins and what Ed did for me, you know, the masters in film, I'm supposed we haven't taken by doing this, it showed me that there's a better tool than didactic argument for me to try to show my points and my experiences with other people, and vice versa for everyone else.
For the masses.
I believe film is really the best way to get across those types of points,
it's the medium of our time.
And it's a non-confrontational environment. Yeah. You can feel however you want during a film. It's afterwards that you have to have the conversation. And you don't have to have the conversation. You can go watch something like Tomboy. It can make you think.
Exactly.
But you don't have to discuss that with anybody. It just makes you think.
Exactly.
So if you feel embarrassed, this is why, like, listen, and this isn't making fun of anybody in specific, so anyone's listening to this thing, you're talking about me. Like, no, this is all of you. I have changed a lot when it comes to race, and I don't put up with a lot of stuff I used to put up with before, mainly because I felt like I was forced to be white for most of my life, and now I'm going to be very much the other way because it's important for me to preserve my heritage and preserve where I come from. But let me tell you, the amount of white people that I call racist that are like, I'm not racist, and they get really, really angry about it. And it's like, mate, don't get me wrong, I'm racist too. Racist shit too. Half white. Trust me, I was trained and all these things. That's how I can tell you're being racist, because I was doing it for a long time. Yeah. And people just get so angry. And it's only because they just don't want to say it. And it's like, I'm not going to tell you I'm a racist.
Yeah.
Like, if they would have said it, then we can continue with the conversation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But because they don't say it, because they won't admit to it, it's like, we can't go anywhere with this conversation. That's who a film is for. Because I can show them something. Yeah. And I can say, just watch this film.
And story is so powerful.
We won't even talk afterwards. I just want you to watch it and understand.
And story is narrative is such a powerful thing, you know? Think about how you learn as a child very much through those tools.
Just, for me, man, like there are people in my life now that, like, I have argued about the race thing with back and forth for years now. Showed them like two films, and all of a sudden they were like,
there you go,
so this is what your life's like, Jason. This is why you feel this way. I'm like, yes, like, sorry. But
and you
introducing
know,
people like Donald Glover and Jordan Peele were able to be like, that's what it's like being mixed race. Like, it sucks. You don't know if you're white or you're black or anything in between.
And I think that although we have talked about the fact that it's not the same thing, right? Like the you know, racism and then transphobia and these kinds of things. But, you know, people suffer and understanding people's suffering through the stories that they tell, I think is just such a powerful tool. And I think that's why film is my favorite medium. As much as I admire like video games and
some non-conversation, I don't understand why it's not more popular here. Because they said that the brick wall I always run into is culturally not knocking this, it's a really good thing about English culture, but it's very non-confrontational. You know what I mean? Yeah. The idea is never to get mad at somebody. Yeah. Why? Because the point around here is
it's impolite.
Exactly, it's impolite. What's the point? So movies are perfect for that because then you can have the discussion without having the discussion. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. If you can get someone to sit through it for an hour and a half, so. So yeah, that was watching that.
So the update to this is not really an update; it's tangentially connected. But J.K. Rowling got in trouble again because she commented on an article from the Scottish police saying that they allow people who've been accused of rape to determine their gender. And, she said that that's ridiculous. It is a very complex thing. And two straight dudes.
If we weren't on the podcast, I get you to unwind that for me now. Like, well, what does J.K. Rowling find wrong with that? And equally, what's the other side of that coin? Like, what would be the counter argument from the rapist and accused rapist?
And yeah, I think it's potentially a generational thing as well. You know, J.K. Rowling is of a generation that saw the world in a certain way, and now, things are very different. Mm. But, yeah, I also read this thing that Will Wheaton wrote about Dave Chappelle and everything that's going on with that.
Oh, yeah. That's Star Trek Will Wheaton, right?
Yeah. And I don't know. It's when celebrities start like piping in on these things, I cringe a little.
I would say that maybe we lose perspective because we feel exactly the same way on this. Like, you and I are very similar, that it was the same thing when the Me Too movement happened, and people knew this because I was in Hollywood at that time. Now, I have never been anyone important in Hollywood, but typical me, I've known people that were important in Hollywood, and I've hung out with people that were important in Hollywood because that's just kind of what I do. You know what I mean? And so when all these people started coming around saying, I knew nothing, and this wasn't, I had a sister in the industry at the time, you know what I mean? And I was out there, and I'm like, I call bullshit. That's funny, know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's funny. That's not the things I remember from the parties I went to. But sure, if you want to tell yourself that because it makes you feel better. It's why I love the morning show, because it's one of the key wedges through that whole thing is like, you people all knew. It's just how you cope with having
you've
known
justified
that,
it. You've kind of like, moved
and don't
on.
Be wrong. I worked at law firms, not my law firms. These never happened in my law firms, but I worked at law firms for years, and it's like the same issues exist at those places because you have hierarchies and you have things like that. So,
again, the morning show, like, for me, that's important media.
It's the minutiae of the conversation. You have to have it from both sides. So a good example of that, why I get funny sometimes about trans rights and things like that, is because sometimes I think it ignores the other side of the argument. And I hate that. So why I was looking at the Rosie Kay thing is like, well, did she have a point? I've seen this before where someone raises an issue and then they Twitter wall comes up. And it's like, but you have to entertain both sides of the argument because there will be relevant points on the other side. It may not be everything they say. It may not even be majority of what they say. But I find this when I have to argue, with feminists and things like that. One of the biggest problems I have with the feminist movement is not, I am a feminist. I fully believe in full rights. I was raised by, a virtually single woman and my sister, and I've always fought for them because I saw what they went through growing up.
Look up the definition of feminist in the dictionary. It's someone who believes in equality for both sexes.
But where I push is when I sit at places and they don't understand that I'm sometimes in like the stay-at-home dad. And that's kind of embarrassing because people don't even really recognize you as a person that does those types of things. And it's like, well, why is it easy for a woman to be recognized as a stay-at-home something? But if a man does those same things, we can't reverse the gender rules.
It's nuanced. It's
exactly. It's, and so that's what I'm saying.
There's more to it than just
it's
right and wrong.
Equal rights is one thing, but we have to get in the minutiae of what that really means. And so equal rights for trans and women and everything in between, yes, it needs this discussion. Mm. But it needs a discussion first.
Yeah.
And then people can decide how they feel. Because the problem is, you know, and the worst, you know, worst people of this are not Twitter liberals or Twitter trans people or Twitter anything. The worst you can see is the Republican Party in my own country. Mm. They minority rule through everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The idea is if they can scream loud enough about something and get enough angry people on TV about it that you all believe mm. that everyone thinks this way. Or the worst is when they say half the country believes this. Yeah. Bullshit. Yeah, yeah. Okay? What you all need to learn to do, and I really am calling to action on this one because it really pisses me off, is learn to read for yourselves. Mm. And learn to figure out who believes what, not by believing what the news tells you, but by talking to people and having discussions with this. That's how Twitter and social media, in my view, have ruined this conversation because until you talk to someone else, you don't know what they think.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's it. I'm sorry. It amazes me that this is an issue that I've had for weeks now, maybe a couple months, because it is generational and I do tend to be absolutely on the other side with everything else. You know what I mean? And this one, I do consider myself quite liberal with it because, you know, as I said, part of my early teenage years were spent DJing in transvestite clubs. Like that's, trans clubs.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so.
Again, that was the word back then.
No, transsexual and transvestite back then. Now, of course, there's much more in between. But that was how it was. And, you know, I tried to learn and I tried to understand. And I never had any problem with any of it.
No.
It's just now, I don't have a problem with people say it's what they don't listen to. It's like, well.
And it's the people sticking their heads in the sand. And like you say, you know, listening to what people tell them rather than.
I've made the same arguments on race. You know, when I said, like, I'm not necessarily keen on an all-black Western. Mm. When I talk to my friends that are very, you know, very into black rights, and sometimes it's to the detriment of white rights, it's like, no. Like, there are poor. You know, not just poor white people. There are white people in the world that deserve, everybody deserves the kind of intention that we have. And that's why you can't just say, well, we need to do this for our rights and we need to do that for that rights. It's all about the melting pot or the salad, whichever one you want.
Yeah. it unfortunately, with these things, like we've talked about in the past with the Me Too movement and things like that, there's often I would call an overcorrection, a kind of swing of the pendulum kind of too far the other way before it can come back.
It's a formula. First becomes the simplification of an issue. That's always the first problem, is that you take something complicated and you make it into a buzz line or a sentence, and then all of a sudden you lose. And take it from a lawyer. This is all about what I do. You know, looking at a sentence and saying, does it contain everything we need it to say what we need it to say? Right. Like, that's what happens. They take out all the details, all the facts that make this something different from what it really is, and then you start wars on that with people. Verbal wars. And that's the stupidity.
And that's
why I get pissed off, because I spent my whole life being a person that could debate and argue and be opinionated and be good at that. And now I'm surrounded by people who think that they're really great at that because they can read sentences to me. And I'm like, it's all in the detail.
Because they can retweet.
Exactly. And it's like, it's all in the detail. Yeah. So sorry, that was the long-winded on Tomboy. Just watch Tomboy.
Yeah.
And some of this Dave Chappelle and all this other shit will start going to rest for you because you'll just get it. You're like, oh, that's what they're talking about. Like, yes, it's that simple.
The Christmas Apocalypse.
I'm not even there yet. I still have other things that I watched.
Okay, what else did you watch?
What else did I watch? What else did I talk about? So we were talking about Tomboy, Watchmen. Did I talk about Watchmen yet? I talked about Watchmen last week, so I won't say.
I mean, we also did like a 2-hour podcast on Watchmen.
So I won't say much on Watchmen. It just
you've watched it for the third time, though.
Yeah, and like, man, it's. I guess why I want to bring it up just briefly, is because it has the impact 3 times in a row. Like, that shouldn't happen. That doesn't happen normally at all. Like, normally if I've seen something, it won't have the same emotional resonance.
Yeah.
But it's such a well-put-together 9 episodes that, like, I was like, because I'm on the tail end now, and I'm like, God, the tail end's even better than the beginning.
You know what I mean?
Like, it starts so good, but it ends even better.
I'll definitely go for a rewatch at some point, just because I think you're absolutely right. There's a lot to unpack there.
I started watching it because I needed some words in my writing on race relations, and so I was like, well, this is a good one about that, talking about like sort of some of the issues that we're still dealing with because of all of this, and how does that influence? So that gets your brain cooking about that, but then. The latter half of it is really about time and love. And I'm like, that's a whole different section of writing for me. So I'm like, then I was like, oh, let's watch these and write about that. And then it was like, no.
When it kind of develops, it gets really, really good.
Yeah.
Not that it's not good at the beginning.
When it gets into that Rick and Morty kind of shit, like, that's my jam. That's my life philosophy. And so that's why, like, there's certain scenes that just make me, like, feel. Like, I just, like, yes.
Completely.
any rate, so the last thing, because I have to bring it up, because it was amazing, and I'm very mad at Variety right now. Okay. West Side Story.
Oh, yes, that's right.
I want to live in America.
In America.
I feel pretty. Oh, so pretty.
Yeah, great songs. Great songs.
Amazing songs. And funnily enough, my daughter and I both agree. Now, my wife saw just West Side Story, the new one. She hasn't seen the original. But my wife, my daughter and I, because we all three went to go. It's the girl's birthday this week. Mm. So took the girls to the, that was like the first of the birthday gifts this week. And so I took them to this, and we all liked it. But Catherine and I actually, and this is horrible because I know they use brown face, and I don't agree with brown face, and I'm not trying to say I agree with any of that, but we like the original a little bit better. Just a little bit. Okay. Like, just a hair.
Because?
I don't know. I think because it's clearly a remake. Like, right. Like, the old one was written in the 60s. Yeah. Oh, it's all the same setting. Right, so it's right, 1950s right. New York. Right. That's the whole reason I love it, guys. You're talking about, I believe it's the Upper West Side. Mm-hmm. It might be Hell's, it wasn't Hell's Kitchen, because Hell's Kitchen is the Dominicans. But I believe it's the Upper West Side, mm-hmm. and it's all about the 50s. And this is like, my specific family is not in this, obviously, but this is the thing. The best, okay, so the, I'm going to cry now. No, I really am, man, okay. Because the best
it's part. It's okay, I will laugh
at you. The best part was coming home in the car, and we're talking mm-hmm. about, and I was like, Rita Moreno, who was in the first one, and then my daughter just stops fishing. She says, Dad, I just realized something. Am I mixed race? And I was like, baby, yeah, you're really mixed race. I said, you're less than daddy, because obviously mommy's white. But I said, but I'm, you know, half white and half everything else, basically. Mm-hmm. So that would make you like a quarter everything else and three quarters white. She's like, I'm really proud of that. And I was like, and you just swell as a dad, because listen, guys, when she was born, I remember, because she was born and a Jamaican English nurse picks her up and says, like, what am I putting on the birth certificate? I said, mixed race, other. And the woman just glared at me and was like, because she has blonde hair and blue eyes. You know what I mean? I'm like, and I was like, but still, like, she's got to recognize that that's not all of who she is. Like,
again, nuance, people.
Nuance, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the whole thing with me. It's because I'm mixed and, like, everything about my life is nuance. Mm. Like, so going to this thing itself, first off, the first controversy that I was trying to look at was the use of Spanish without subtitles. It is jarring. I asked Becky, and first off, the best part was, and this is why I love Steven Spielberg, coming out of that, my daughters asked me all these questions in Spanish, or about Spanish. Mm. And she says, Daddy, could you teach me Spanish if I wanted to learn Spanish? And I was like, yeah, I speak it fluently. Like, it's one of the few languages that I do know. You know what I mean? Like, other languages I know bits and pieces of, but Spanish, you know, it's, and God, we have so many Spanish speakers that we know between Ed and I. Ed, you know, three times as fluent as I am, so I think it's fluent than I am, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah, if my daughter wanted to speak Spanish, man, that's easy. We can get tons of people to help her out with that. But it was that she wanted to after that, because there were all these scenes that happened where, like, you'll get the gist of what's going on, but you don't. Then they turn and talk to each other. And the whole point was, during the film, all the white guys are always like, speak English. Mm. You live in America now. You speak English. Like, well, this is a big deal in America, guy, because Puerto Ricans, their family language is Puerto Rican Spanish, okay? Every other Hispanic in America, virtually the same way, okay? Maybe if you're second or third generation and you've stopped using Spanish in your home, they don't speak Spanish in my home, but that's the way it is. And it's so disrespectful to say that the only language, and this usually comes from families who had Italian, Polish, or Irish heritage. That's now, the Irish, I don't know if they ever spoke Gaelic at home, but I damn sure know the Italians and the Polish did when they came home. And it's like, how can you say that? Like, it's just the way it is. Like, that's, you know, they prefer to speak in their, you know. And I guess the reason I say that is because to someone in England, like, you'd be like, of course. Because here, I don't think we ever hear that argument. You know, you don't walk into, like, East London and say, why are these people speaking, you know what I mean? Like,
there can be a little undercurrent of that, particularly, like, with Eastern Europeans and stuff like that.
Yeah, sure.
Unfortunately. But no, the people do tend to be a little bit more open about it. But yeah, no, it's ironic as well that, you know, you still see, like, you know, videos put up online and it's someone in a store, like,
the American and English
shouting, speak English, you're in America.
Yeah, I always see, like, over here, it's always actually more well classified to me as, like, a xenophobia. Because English people just have a natural, it's not a very healthy one either, but they have this xenophobia because they don't understand that they come from a million immigrants anyway. You know, like, but Americans, like, there's just, so it's like racism light over here. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, where You know what I mean? It's like, wow, that's not how we do it in England. Like, yeah, you do. You just don't realize that you do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So that was really cool because that was a Steven Spielberg decision. I think very smart and did exactly what it was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
The shots are breathtaking. Mm-hmm. Obviously, songs are breathtaking. Mm-hmm. It has Anton, who is the guy from Baby Driver.
Yeah,
the lead.
El Gort. He's got a weird name. Elgort's his surname.
He does. He does a phenomenal job. Maria does a phenomenal job. Like, every actress and actor in there just does a great job.
Good story to, like, reintroduce to the kids nowadays.
I think it's more relevant now because it deals with... This is kind of what minorities are saying in America. And I think this... It does... It's not... The coolest thing, it's a musical first, guys. So there's not message the whole way through any more than the original West Side Story had that message.
Mm.
You know, because the original West Side Story did have a message about racism.
Yeah, 100%.
But you're talking about the 50s in America, and you look now, and it ain't that much change.
Yeah, that's
there really the isn't, problem, guys. Isn't there really isn't that much change. And that is disturbing to me, that you can hear it may not be the Puerto Ricans. The funny thing that Stephen points out, that my mother always pointed out to me, so before it was the Puerto Ricans, it was the Irish.
Mm.
Before it was the Irish, it was the Italians. Mm. Before the Italians, it was the Poles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every new immigrant that came into New York. Now, I do believe, what I try to explain to my mother is, I do believe it got worse for the Hispanics and the Blacks. Like I said, the Irish were never treated the same kind of way. But
it perhaps, man, like, you know, in the really proper early days.
You say that, but again, that's why you have to, and I'm not mad. I'm just saying you have to distinguish between 200 years of being subjugated by other people versus the Irish, which were able to leave. I mean, they were subjugated by the English, and they were able to leave over here, but not in the same fashion.
Right.
Okay? Don't get me wrong, as I said, I'm a quarter Irish, so you know what I mean? Like, totally, but the funniest thing, when I looked up that part of my heritage, I come from one of the most Republican... We have, like, two Republican statues in the town that my family comes from. You know what I mean? Like, controversially, like, burn the English! And I was like, okay, funny I ended up over here then. So... But that's what I mean, like he was just trying to showcase that this is an issue that reoccurs all the time in New York especially. Mm-hmm. He also talks about gentrification a little bit. Mm-hmm. And there's actually, which I hadn't forgotten, there's actually a complete, we were just talking about the cis white male and that issue. There's a complete issue of that in West Side Story. And I don't want to ruin for people who haven't seen it yet, but there is a character, and even in the original, if you watch the 1950 original, there's basically, it's a girl who wants to hang with the gang. She doesn't consider herself a girl. Mm. She's just like, I'm one of the gang. This one, they just upped it. They modernized it. And it really is. I mean, it is a girl, but it's a boy. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. So, and that's something I don't know how to say that without, I don't want to be offending anybody, but that's what I mean. Like, it's a girl who identifies as a boy.
Yeah.
And they do a much better job in this one. Because in the original, it's kind of like people know about people like that, but they don't want to say what it is.
Right.
Because it was bad. You know, it's like your grandma said, lemon. You know what I mean? Can't say what it is. And here, it's like...
She's a lesbian.
That's what I mean. I'm not saying this girl was a lesbian. I'm just saying she portrayed, you know, she's clearly identifies as a boy.
Yeah.
And things like that. And it was just portrayed really well. There were a couple extra bits to it that kind of made more sense.
Mm.
But phenomenal. You know, hats off to Chino. Chino in the new one is this... Chino is always supposed to be the original love interest, the prince.
Okay.
So it's supposed to be the love interest that Maria is going to marry. So just like in Romeo and Juliet, the prince and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. He's the one that goes to school.
Mm-hmm.
And the new West Side Story, he's the one that's an accountant going studying to be... taking night school to study to be an accountant. Like, damn it, did he look just like my grandpa that was like that? Really? Yeah, Grandpa Chiro, he was studying to be an engineer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was the same thing. He was the good one out of his boys.
Right.
And so he was the one that was going to get in. And they did. Obviously, my grandfather's story, just to kind of head you up to where this fits into West Side Story, my grandfather ended up moving, you know, working two states over from New York City as an engineer just so he can make ends meet and get the family out of the ghetto. And that's what ends up happening when my dad's about 12, 13 years old. That's when they moved to Elmont and moved to the suburbs. But it was interesting to see my grandpa's character, because Chino plays a big role in my side story. But he even had the glasses like my grandpa did. And it just... And my grandpa's not Puerto Rican, but it looked just fucking like him. So I was just like... I was in seventh heaven because I'm like, that's grandpa. That's his character. Anyways, West Side Story. Okay, last bit on it. Variety are I don't know, like, I feel like running a smear campaign on this right now. But there were three articles this morning. One talking about... Ansel and being like, I don't think they've got
that's
him.
Right, Ansel Elgort. Yeah.
So if you don't know about this guy, I think he's phenomenal. But he is, much as we were talking about before when we talked about Manchester by Sea, he's mired in controversy because he had a relationship with a 17-year-old when he was 20. She claims there was, you know, he took her virginity and then he was rough about it. And he says it was consensual. I don't know what the problem is, but it blew up. And obviously, like, they thought he would be pulled from things.
Yeah.
And Variety is, you know. This is what I mean when I'm saying minutia. Like, Variety is reintroducing an article about this on the back of West Side Story saying, I don't think he's been successfully reintroduced. Now, what is my problem with that? By writing an article that says that, that's exactly what happens. Mm. Because you are now going to have people who aren't going to think, they're just going to read what you've written and said, oh, I guess Ansel's still a bad guy.
Mm.
And it's like, could we not have just thought more before we publish something with that in the title saying, doesn't look like he's actually made it back yet. And they're basing this off the fact that West Side Story has not had killer sales,
right.
You know, which everyone knows, well, I wouldn't say everyone knows, but is really based on the fact that this, you know, the key demographic for this era, you know, for this type of musical are middle-aged and older women.
Mm-hmm.
What are middle-aged and older women all doing right now? They're Christmas shopping. They're not in the movie theaters. Plus, we have COVID keeping people out. But that was one article. Then there was another one about, I don't think it's just the old women that are keeping people from seeing this. I think millennials, or I think Gen Zers, hate musicals. Like, I'm not sure I agree with that either. I hang out with a bunch of Gen Zers, and we watch a lot of fucking musicals together. You know what I mean? It's not like I hang out with them all the time, but you know what I mean? I don't ever remember that crowd, my younger friends, being like, fucking hate musicals, man.
Again, like,
why publish something like that? Because then a Gen Zer reads it and say, oh, maybe I'm different. Maybe I shouldn't like musicals.
Yeah.
And so this is what I mean, like, I don't know why Steven Spielberg, I don't know how Steven Spielberg pissed them off and now they're running a campaign against West Side Story, but it felt that way. Three articles. The third one was another opinion piece saying, like, and this is, you know, it was the original one I was talking about, saying, like, this is not making as much money because they released it at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all well and good, Variety, but then you brought up In the Heights didn't make any other money, and I started to feel like, are we doing a campaign against Hispanic, Latino? Like, then it was like, well, Puerto Ricans will go see this, and Dominicans will go see the other. Like, could you just stop with the hate train? It had a critical acclaim, and it was, the critical acclaim was justified, I thought. So, at some point, I just wonder, like, do we not just call off the dogs at certain points with stuff like this? But again, that's just
clickbait, right?
Sour grapes, you know what I mean? Because I like the movie and I want other people to see the movie. And it's like, this doesn't help, guys. And the fact that you're bringing in, you know, In the Heights as if something about Latino musicals is not working, you know, it's like, maybe you shouldn't go down that route. You know what I mean? I don't think the fact that it had Latinos in it had anything to fucking do with why it's not succeeding at the box office.
Yeah.
So, at any rate, now we can move on to properly musical Anna and the fucking Apocalypse.
Before we do, just one other shout out because, it's just so good. Arcane, go watch it. It's brilliant.
Oh yeah, you told me that again.
It's amazing.
Put it on the rotation, maybe.
You know, it deals with, like, mental health in a really interesting way, and it's just the French studio that did the animation for it. Oof. Wow. Something special. Anyway, yes, Anna and the Apocalypse.
I mean, what can we say we haven't already said? Oh. I know, he's looking because he's like, this is why you piss off our viewers, well, Jason.
No, so we're an hour in and we haven't really talked that much.
Well, there you go. That's why we need to do podcast notes. So the real way to fix this for people would be if we could actually, because we're supposed to do transcripts of this, and I'm always like, it really just, maybe next time I'll remember to turn the phone on to get the transcript. We just never remember to record the transcripts because I can have a computer do it while we're talking and I never do. And then people would know that they could just skip the first half and go there. But I'm pretty sure, I mean, we have like, what, 20, 30 core listeners plus everybody else that joins us when we have a film that they like. And I think the 20, 30 core, man, I think they just kind of
They dig the scattiness.
They dig our ridiculousness.
Okay.
Ridiculous. Okay, well, so any apocalypse.
Yeah. What do you want to talk about?
Let's talk about the incredible acting in this. So, one of my favorite things about Annie Apocalypse is it had lots of young actors that I hadn't seen before that are now on the up and up.
Yeah, absolutely. Ella Hunt, who plays Anna, she's like a regular on Dickinson with Hawkeye, Hayley Stanfield.
Okay.
You know,
Dickinson now been picked up by, I believe, Apple TV is another one running that. So I haven't watched it. Any good?
I don't think I'm the core demographic for that either.
You'd be surprised, man. You'd be surprised.
I think it's about Emily Dickinson, the author.
It is?
Yeah. Is that, is she author or poet?
I don't know. I'm just saying this because I like the, I've seen like one episode. I haven't watched the whole thing, but you know, and I think it's good. I don't know. Maybe I dig with like Pride Prejudice stories. Like, it's my inner feminine side, you know?
Yeah. But she was fantastic. I really enjoyed her. It also has another of my guys in this film, Paul Kay, who plays the crazy headmaster.
Okay, yes. So that's a shout out to some of the older characters on this. Paul Kay, Arthur Sav plays Arthur Savage.
Yeah.
Man, I mean, That's the thing. Like, that's what I meant when I said this is a Christmas, because his is probably one of the best roles to show, like, why this is a Christmas film, because his role is cartoonish.
It's, you know, so what I mean? He just revels in being a villainous, mustache twirling guy, which I love. Many people will know him from Game of Thrones, where he played Thoros of Myr. And he was in, honestly, one of the... It's a film that blew my mind. It's All Gone Pete Tong. Have you seen that?
No, I know the expression.
Oh, dude, you would love it, because it's very much about music and electronic music. And he is... Like, he's one of those guys who... He came out as a comedian early on in his career. Mm-hmm. He's done a bunch of stuff in the UK. But, like, I think he could win an Oscar.
Okay.
Like, seriously, watch It's All Gone Pete Tong.
Okay. All right. One for the list. It's All Gone Pete Tong. About more about music for me, because I absolutely love music. I'm going to get a guitar for Christmas, mate.
That's right, baby.
So, what are some of the other... Marley Sue is the one that caught my attention, because she's been on my list for a while. So, I do... You know, I'm the producer working with casting directors that we have.
Mm-hmm.
I have to try to find people I think will be appropriate for the stuff we're writing if we can get bigger names. She is one of them. Now, she hasn't been in a ton of stuff. She was in The Irregulars, which really didn't do that well on Netflix.
Okay.
But then she was also in Our Ladies, which is an adaptation of a play that has been done, another musical, and she did really well with that. She's been in Run. Is this
the girl who plays the best friend, the one who sings the
she
song?
She has kind of a minor role, and that is me, isn't it? I always pick the girls that have role, because that's when I feel great. That's 18-year-old Jason working. I always feel I have a better chance picking up the phone if I can get that girl and be like, listen, you weren't the star, but I can make you the star. No, I mean, seriously, though. Like, that's how we pick up coming up. And it's now she's in Alex Rider, which I haven't watched yet, but that's like IMDb's TV show.
Oh, really?
That's made by IMDb TV. Mm. So I'm going to check it out now, because I'm like, this might firmly be, then I'll get my agent's contact details, and I'll be
she's in the, probably in one of my favorite scenes in the film.
Which one was that?
Where she's singing the really inappropriate song.
The Anya Taylor-Joy moment. Yeah, the showcase. Like, look at this. Look at this beautiful high school girl singing a song that's making you all feel dirty right now.
And the looks of the parents in the audience. And then the retiring headmaster who's like, yay.
Shout out to John McPhail as well. Like, this is a guy that, John, you and I have definitely had drinks at Fright Fest before, I'm sure. I never remember anyone's name at Fright Fest. But I looked on your photo, like IMDb, and I looked at your photo. I'm like, holy shit, I think I've had like a dozen drinks with that guy. Like, whenever you were down, you would have been hanging out with probably the same people I was. And this is, you know, quintessentially probably your best work, but I hope you see a lot of
What did
more.
He play?
He's the director. He's the guy.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So I really, you know, the concept and everything. The guys who, the other shout out to have for this.
Oh, yeah, because the story is quite touching of, like, you know, how this came about with the guy who did the short.
That's right. So if you watch the credits, you can see that bit where they talk about all the people that did the test for. This is all the stuff. This is how we learn to do things like this. So everybody thinks we're funny when we say, make a short and then you can get the feature made. That's how this one came about. Mm. So they made, you know, a short for it. John McPhail, you know, getting it all backed. But then...
No, it was Ryan McHenry.
Yes, because Ryan McHenry wrote it. So, yeah. And then you get the songs are done by a duo that Roddy Hart and Tommy Riley that have actually gone on now to do. They did 19 Women, that one I was just talking about. Mm-hmm. They've gone on to do a couple more things right now. And it's just kind of an area to watch because these guys... are well known for being able to put those two things together.
It kind of broke my heart, though, when I read about... Because, you know, Ryan McHenry... So he did the zombie musical short film, which then, like Jason's saying, got interest from producers. Hey, let's do a feature. And unfortunately, he died of cancer.
That's why he has that shout out to him in the end. Yeah. Sorry, I should have mentioned that.
And he was kind of the person who was trying to get it done, and it's heartbreaking when you see something like that, and it made me appreciate it like a ton more.
Yeah, I just always thought, God, because you know, you and I, we're not dying of cancer or anything like that. But you know, I guess the point.
Life is short.
Always, that's from the producer. Because the problem when it comes to projects, and God knows I have this problem up the yang at our studio, not because of Ed, but just in general, like, you can sit on a project forever. Like, we have so many concepts that we'll get to concept, maybe get to script, and then it just sits because we're either waiting on someone to come back to us or something. And sometimes you just have to pull the trigger. You know, you just have to go forward because life is short, man. You know what I mean? And so you don't want to be sitting on a project that you're never going to get done. And so I always say this because we do get called by other people. We're always talking about projects and concepts, and that's what our, you know, my job is as a producer. And the biggest thing, if it's that important to you, if it's that thing that is going to define the message you want to give to the world, then you better damn well give it. Yeah. And I hate to say it that way, but too many times I am on a Zoom call or a telephone conversation or a meeting with somebody where they're saying, yeah, we're going to get this done next year. Or, yeah, we're going to do this, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, can you do it now? You know? And if you're waiting on money, fine. If you're waiting on other things, fine. But if it's your concept and you just want to get it out, then there is a push that you need to start giving to that. You know, and on the big stuff, if it's that one project that's going to be the one, you know, it's going to make you into the artist you want to be, then you've got to fight for that.
Yeah, I think, you know, we often try to kind of, you know, warn young filmmakers about, you know, don't necessarily put all your eggs in one basket. Don't, you know, don't do this, don't do that. But yeah, life is short, man. And sometimes you know, the phrase passion project exists for a reason.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. I'm not trying to tell anybody what to do. As I said, we had the discussion about Anna Billiard and her passion project that ended up beautifully. Yeah. You know what I mean? 8 years put into it and it came out exactly as she needed. And, you know, I guess the problem that I have, what I said is I couldn't make a film for 8 years, is I'm never, you know, if everything stayed the same for 8 years, and it's like, wow, there's so much. So a lot of time when it comes with projects and me, I look at things and say, I have to take this from cradle to grave now, because if it goes away, it's not going to get made. Mm. You know what I mean? And so it's just keep that in mind. You know, sad thing about that, that's part of the story on this one, is that didn't get to see it. I will say they did honor him so well with this, though, with
what they did, a
with
great job
done. So,
and it's such a charming film as well. Like, it's it reminded me of my school days as well, like with the uniforms and stuff like that, and the, you know, the pageant, the talent show kind of thing, you know, the Christmas show.
And that's why I
used to act. I got a video I should show you at some point.
There you go. Were you the lobster in the nativity?
No, I played Vera, the middle-aged married woman who was like really nosy and stuff like that.
Okay, there you go.
To rave reviews.
Okay.
That's when I thought I could be an actor.
I was about to say, if you want to be Vera, you can be Vera, mate. It's okay. We'll let you be a middle-aged woman. No, I think the best way to look at the rest of this, the rest of the talk we can do about Anti-Apocalypse, maybe divide it up, because why this is a good film and why it's not as good of a film is the same thing. It's because it has this multitude of areas that it goes into, but that's also the reason that it falls down a bit. So what I'd like to do, just for the end of this, because we'll probably spend like another half hour on all this, and I say that'll be another hour now, but another half hour, talking about the three different elements that I saw in this, and if there's another element, we can add it in there. But for me, you had three different movies here. You had a zombie film, you had a Christmas film, and you had a high school musical. Does that sound about right?
Yes, I would agree with that.
Okay, so let's take each of those in kind. Mm-hmm. And I imagine the High School Musical part would be very short because it doesn't have a whole lot of background into that. But we can talk about that. Let's talk first about this as a zombie film.
Yeah.
Why is it good as a zombie film?
I think it does the things that zombie films do well, in terms of the kind of the slow build to the appearance of the zombies, very much in the vein of, you know, Shaun of the Dead and stuff like that.
That for me, and that, again, I'm not picking up that for you it's like that, but for me that was the closest association I could make with that, was that, oh, okay, this is like Shaun of the Dead realism, where we're seeing actual things being played out that way.
Yeah. I think that it had some really good kills in it as well.
Favorite kill?
Probably bowling ball exploding brains out of the back of the head. I thought that was really, really good.
That is a particularly good one.
There's just the head in the toilet as well. I don't think I've ever seen
that's
that one.
My favorite one.
Yeah.
Oh, and shout out to her. Oh, God, I missed the name. It's not on here. But that is not only... is it Sarah Swire?
Sarah Swire, yeah?
Yeah, Sarah Swire is not only... I just really digged her character as well. Mm. I just thought she was a good actress, mm. you know, really well played through. But she's also the choreographer.
Oh, so gotcha. This was another, the American girl,
this was
yeah.
a really cool thing that I thought mm. when I read it, that she not only is in the film, but she's also the one...
I thought that was really smart, having an American character in there.
I thought so.
Because I thought that it's a nice in for a potential American audience.
Yeah. You know? And she played it well. Yeah.
Yeah, and they don't overplay it.
Which is a Scottish film, right? Yeah. So that's what yeah, I mean. Yeah. Like, they had some Scottish characters, but then they have Northern characters. And...
Yeah.
So where does this fall down as a zombie film? Maybe where it wasn't as good as a zombie film.
I think that, and it's funny, because it does kind of go into what you said, that is the downfall to a certain degree of this film, is that it would gain a lot of momentum, often as zombie films do as they go along, right? And then they'd break into a song. Mm-hmm. And it was always like a quite emotional song, and, you know, like, it was very earnest. And zombie films are, again, horror light. It's kind of, there's more comedy there often than there is, like, horror, you know?
Okay.
And I think that by breaking it up with songs, which are about feelings and emotions and stuff like that, you kind of lose just that little bit of the momentum that a zombie film needs, particularly in the third act.
I think maybe the way I would say is, I think zombie films, they're not all comedic. That's why I was noticing what you were saying, because it's like, some are. Like, yeah. Shaun of the Dead.
I guess the ones I like.
Our boy Matthias, which we will have you on the show. I just sent you something on Facebook because you did something really cool I thought was awesome. I don't know if you've seen it, that he's done a video of, like, the sinking of the Bismarck with for a video game thing. It's really cool. I'll send it over to you. Matthias, we love you. Matthias's Cockney v. Zombies is... That's, you know, that's comedy.
Yeah.
But then you have the other half of it, which is like more your Walking Dead kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Which is the post-apocalyptic.
Right.
And that's always like, there's no humor in that.
Yeah,
you know, it's all
enough.
Like, it's all like, no.
It's very, very
This is like, this
serious,
is all, I'm pretty sure, in the Zeitgeist, this was all the pre-COVID stuff in our brain. Like, this was all.
Yeah, and I did notice that this film, like, slotted in really well with, like, what's kind of going on in the world.
Well,
you know?
It's the other thing about it being a zombie film is zombie films are great in 2017. In 2021, I'm not...
Really? You didn't like it?
No, I don't know. I don't know if I didn't like it. It just doesn't... It hits Walking Dead than Shaun of the Dead.
Right.
Because
gotcha.
It's not as funny to be
Yeah.
Because you can't just throw away... Like zombie films used to just throw away, it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
We're all going to have to do this. Yeah. Nowadays, like, there is a genuine fear from people that this could be the end of the world. Yeah. You know what I mean? So you just have to be careful because it's like... Honestly, subconsciously, all of us are slightly
afraid
of that.
It hits you differently now.
Yeah, exactly. Just ever so much. So, okay, as a zombie film, it works pretty well, I think, as a zombie film. Maybe that's its strongest piece, is the zombie film, because the kills are good. It definitely has a zombie film message throughout. The ending is, you know, apocalyptic as it comes. Again, slightly marred by the next bit. Let's go into the Christmas bit next, because, you know... The only part that mars the zombie bit is this break from reality, which, you know, the end of End of the Apocalypse. You have this horrible ride off in the sunset. You don't know where any of these people are going to end up.
Yeah.
And then it's like, Merry Christmas from a zombie! And you're like, ha, ha, ho, ho, fuck.
Yeah.
Like, that's not cool. Like, why? I mean, it was. It was funny and it made you laugh, but you're like, it wasn't a funny or laughable scene.
Right. Yeah. I think that Shaun of the Dead did a really good job of having a kind of Deus Ex Machina happy ending. Because it had gotten really quite dark and quite sad, and you know, he just kills his mother, and, you know, his best friend just dies.
We've talked about it a couple times. We talked about it with Prisoners in the Whistle. Like, it is something you have to consider. Again, producer talking, but, you know what I mean? It's like,
the
guys...
The release, right?
This is for an audience, and so it's the only thing I'll say. It's the reason Zack Snyder and I never get along, because I don't feel Zack Snyder understands his audience. I don't think he understands that people don't want to sit through a film that depresses them. They may do that.
They may
sit through a film that will impress them. But ultimately, they go to a theater for an experience.
And to be entertained.
And so the vast majority of the time, they want to leave feeling a little better than when they came in. You know? Even horror movies. People don't always get that. Even horror movies are designed to do that. It's going to bring up these endorphins in you that are going to make you feel a little bit better when you leave, because you're not...
And then walking out, you're on a high.
You're safe, you know? And so, like... That's what I mean. Like, especially if it's, you know, as we move into this Christmas bit, like, Christmas is all about, it's not so bad. That's right. What I love about England, because, man, Christmas is, the whole reason we have this holiday, guys, because it gets really dark, really cold. No one else, you know, wants to deal with it. We need something to break up, you know, so we don't have to sit through January, February, and March without having a holiday.
Yeah.
So, that is one of the intrinsic problems with putting a zombie apocalypse movie with Christmas.
Yeah, it's a good point.
But let's talk Christmas. What did they do well with Christmas with this one?
Well, I feel like the music was appropriately Christmassy, you know? And it's just a vibe. It's it made me think of Shredders, for example, you know? I think there's a lot of comedy in Christmas and stuff like that. The English are very particular about their Christmases as well, you know?
Sure.
Again, the talent show, perfect example.
This is what I mean. You know? It felt that someone had clearly, you know, this was written by a British group, and it's clear that they knew what elements of that. I mean, as I said, I was more blown over with the Christmas stuff because it fit. It may be because I have a kid, so I've been forced to watch all the nativity movies, all the Christmas stuff. I have to watch it incessantly, really. And this fits this. This fits it perfectly. Like, it just has the right... Everything for Christmas always has this shine to it, this kind of, like, Christmas glow, you know, that's supposed to have for it.
Yeah, it's a feeling, though, isn't it? Because I can't even think of any, like, really specific moments.
It is, but because we're on a film show, I would say I think it's more than that. I think it's also, like, production design. I think it's all shot selection. Like, it all fits this Christmas model, this kind of, like... This is how we make Christmas films. It has, you know, watch Elf, you know, where Jon Favreau does that with a, you know, has just those kind of shortcut smiles, as I would say. It's like everything's light and airy and happy. This had elements of that. I said it kind of goes between that and the apocalypse, apocalypse. And that's where I think you can kind of lose your way in it a little bit if you start taking it too seriously with the zombie bit.
You're 100% right as well, because it does, there are some fucking pretty devastating moments, and it kind of jives a little bit with the Christmas, you know.
That's why post pandemic I'm not sure it works as well as it did pre pandemic. Pre pandemic was easy to make this a laugh. Like when
this
we
was
saw
like 2017.
I saw it. I would say, was it 2016 Fright Fest? Maybe it was 2017 Fright Fest. But I mean, it was a 9 o'clocker, and everybody loved it. Like this was ridiculously. Everybody just cheered for this film. And we could back then because it wasn't like. That's the joy of horror movies. Like, you walked out of that one like, ha, 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 yeah, zombie apocalypse on Christmas.
Yeah.
That's silly shit. Yeah. And that's the only thing I was saying. In 2021, I was like, yeah, COVID for Christmas, man. That sounds weird. That never happened, right?
It's a little too close to home.
Just a little. Just because it takes the Christmas edge off. That's what it kept to me before that. It had that Christmas packaging. And that's where the Merry Christmas with the zombie at the end fits. Because it's all a laugh, man. Have fun. Christmas horror story, very similar. That has a tragic, crazy ending to it. But, like, it's William Shatner in Christmas. Like, it's funny. It's fun, you know?
Yeah.
So, that was, like, the good stuff with the Christmas. I mean, the bad stuff with the Christmas. Did you think there was anything that was, like...
I think sometimes it felt a little forced. Like, not that they didn't initially, from the get-go, make it, like, a Christmas movie. But, like, oh, we've got to remind people that it's Christmas.
Right.
You know?
Right. Sorry, because I knew you'd say that, and I completely agree. Like... It's one of those things asking you the question because I already knew the answer. Like, yes, like what I was getting at before, it's a double-edged sword because it looks factory made to a certain extent. And I don't know the production companies behind this. I didn't really research that because I thought this was largely, I thought, granted with grants, like European
National
bonds.
Lottery and
there was a German bond on it as well. So like, you know, that kind of money you don't normally see as much of a cookie cutter formula. It's a working title thing or something like that, but it was there. It was really there. And it was like, oh, we could have probably dialed back. It's a horror film, so like you can always dial back on that with an indie horror audience because they're not used to that. They don't see anything in that kind of pristine little, like, you know, oh, we're making a cookie cutter movie to release in the box office. And the other thing with this was, producer side, Ed, this wasn't really, I mean, maybe it came out in the theaters for a while, but this was not a theatrical release film. Like, it's a shame. As I said, it only shows up on film 4, but who else can you market it to? You can't.
It's tough.
You can't Christmas this to kids.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I told you, it was my biggest thing is my daughter, we're going to get to the High School Musical part in just a minute, but my daughter obviously loves musicals. That's how it's got the whole family in the musicals. We spend a sing and dance around the house, and I can't show her this. And I'm lenient dad. I'll show her anything.
Yeah.
It's just, no, I'm not going to show her a zombie Christmas. We'll make her feel good for Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to take her favorite holiday and put dead bodies all over it. You know what I mean? So, because there are generally some really sad moments. Like, like when, you know, not when the grand dies, but when that couple dies.
Oh,
I was just like, why? You know, I was a bit. Yeah. That's how zombie films are. They're supposed to keep you with certain people at the end. John was the same way.
And the father. Yeah, John and the father as well. It was all very, like, it was a downer, dude. Like, it was really, really upsetting. I felt bad for Anna. And again, she did a great bit of acting, like when she's saying goodbye to her father who's been bitten and stuff. But yeah, no, it's that kind of playing with the knobs, you know, to get the right
levels. You know, people do this with Christmas. Why I keep arguing with people that, like, you don't want your Christmas to start 8 weeks out because it won't be enjoyable for you. Like, Christmas is a designed holiday, guys. It's not like it just magically, you know, I'm sorry, probably all the Christians in the house are not gonna appreciate that. You know, I used to be a Christian, guys. But, you know, like, it was put there because we didn't want people killing themselves over a cold winter. You know what I mean? Long time ago. And that's why it's still there, because, man, it gets hard. The last thing you want to do to people is show them people dying, you know, all over the place and stuff like that. So that was kind of the difficulty in the Christmas Messages, I think. It was just like, it's not really a Christmassy film.
Yeah, I think if it would have been... And again, I could be totally wrong. It might have gone completely Pete Tong. Again, we're using that. But, like, if it would have been hammed up more, if it would have been more comedy than, like, you know, drama, I don't know. Do you think that would have made it work better?
I that's what I'm debating. And I don't think so. Because this is one of those films I do actually quite think is near perfect. It's confused. But
But
the blend is near there. It's like, it's kind of coffee that you didn't put enough milk in it for me, but I'll drink it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, they're definitely walking a tightrope, and a couple of moments in the film feel a little bit wobbly, but they still get across, do you know what I mean?
And the reason we have to have them get across is to get to that third point, of the third thing that was in here. So the High School Musical is all about that word you used like four times in this podcast, which is Ernst.
Ernest, yeah.
Yeah, it has to be, right? Because that...
Well, I don't know if it has to be, but that's definitely... That was a choice, right?
But that's... Because I'm pretty sure that's what this is picking up on. Mm. Like, the type of music that this is... The type of musical it is imitating is the type written for Greatest Showman, High School Musical. Mm-hmm. You're talking about... High School Musical is the better example because Greatest Showman was an evolution of that kind of type of singing. But it's not...
Oh, Zac Efron.
Yeah, but it's not like a Leonard Bernstein, or it's not a... you know, it's not in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's a specific type of... I watch these all the time because Disney Channel puts them out for, like, The Descendants and for...
Yeah.
You know, which is one of Catherine's favorites. Yeah. There's three of those.
Pretty good, actually. They're really good.
I've
watched them with Catherine.
This is what happens. They're really good. So you're like, all right. You know what
I mean? You can see they're kind of... they're giving a message through the songs and through the lyrics.
Right,
but
what I mean with that is if you were songwriting this, the type of measures that they're using, the type of keys, the octaves, like all these different things are all using that playbook and saying, make it like High School Musical.
Mm.
And because of that, it has to be the High School Musical topics because they're in high school. So it's all earnest discussions about, is my life really worth this? And then what I liked is it evolves into, you know, this is like my 10th watching of this film. And I hadn't picked up on the fact that the initial songs are all about you must do this with your life and you need to figure out what to do with your life. And then there's an apocalypse. And so it's funny because that's the irony of those songs. Like, who gives a shit? The world's coming to an end. Like,
it's very clever. It's very, very clever.
So the songs are ironic without wanting to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I hadn't picked up until I watched it this time. I said, that makes it even better.
As much as I loved the scene with the inappropriate singing, but the song that I liked the most was the Hollywood ending song.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah. Part of that
is the song, though. So out of the best songs, the reason that's the best is that little oo-wop they put in the beginning, and they get the whole cafeteria singing it. Like
the cleaning lady as well, into the choreography.
Because that's the other thing I would bring up about it is, like, as someone who's a big fan of musicals, and someday, Katie Bonham, I'll be bugging you about writing one with you or something like that. But, you know, this was structured well as a musical. It had the right kind of blocking, the right kind of choreography. That's why I brought her up, because that's the other thing you're looking for is, do these scenes set themselves up properly? Do they look, you know, West Side Story, obviously that was a big deal for that. I say In the Heights did it better, but
I still need to watch In the Heights.
You're coming over to the house, you're watching. Yeah. And about the barrio,
that's right, New Year's Eve maybe.
Suenito. Yeah, 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 that'd be a good time to watch it. So with this one, the blocking, the choreography, and the use of what was there, you know, was just perfect. Like,
I think so.
That's the best song for that.
And
but
and very English as well.
It was, you know? because then you have songs like, and the variety was there as well, because then you had other more Andrew Lloyd Webber type, which is like the Soldier of War song.
Yes.
Which I love that song. That was
pretty good. Yeah.
I love it because you hate that guy, but you love that guy. He's a Jude Law. He's gorgeous. And you know, he's this guy you want to hate, but that's musicals. Mm. They always create the love interest.
I felt so hard for John though, because I've been there, you know, pining over someone who's like, but you're my best friend.
That's what I'm telling you. It's teaching you. Musicals were trying to teach you back in the day. You got to be the other guy. Be the asshole.
Oh, no.
You're like, no, I won't do it, Jason. I won't. Nice guys will get the girl someday.
You know.
Someday. I've never been a nice guy, so I wouldn't know.
But yeah, that Soldier of War song, really, really quite good and fun as well.
And the last song is one of my favorites as well, because it's so poignant. Mm. The only thing with it was, like, again, I was struck by the irony of it.
How does it go?
That living your moment for each, you know, I will live... I will fight, I will do this.
Yeah.
And the only problem was, I was like, this is a great song aside the fact that it's an apocalypse. Yeah. They're all dead.
I think, honestly, just with the little change of a happy ending, I think that would have done a lot for this film.
Okay, so if we could have done, because this is what I loved about, like, Dawn of the Dead played with me this way. The new Dawn of the Denise, not the Denise film, Zack Snyder.
The last good film he made. Sorry, Zack.
No, but it, all right, this is why I'm like, even I can shit on this one too. Because that one had the happy ending that is killed in the credits. Get away in Dawn of the Dead, they fly away in the boat, and you're finally like, oh, well, at least they made it. And then immediately the credits starts, and they land on the boat and there's zombies. And you're like, motherfucker.
Yeah, okay, so he managed to ruin that one as well. But overall, I liked it.
Those are people who die. Lots of people who die.
Again, I keep using this word charming, and it sounds a little bit backhanded as a compliment, but it really is. From the first moment, I was like, oh, okay, this isn't necessarily my kind of musical, I really like it.
This is where you are southern and sometimes a bit posh. Like, you mean charming in that way, in the way that we could sit... Not your mother, but someone posh and not normally into this and be like, exactly. No, you'll like this. It's a bit gory, okay. But...
Just close your eyes Close your eyes
for the gore, but you'll love the songs. Yeah, the songs are beautiful.
Yeah, exactly.
So you could get the Suburban Crew on this one. Yeah, you know what I mean? Because it's a Christmas film.
And that's why...
And you can add it to the Christmas rotation. Yeah, yeah. Everybody has the Christmas movies. Completely. This could go into a lot of people's rotations.
We should do a quick, like, Christmas movie rotation list.
Next episode, let's do it.
Okay,
I can't do it. I can't do it now, because I need time. I love my Christmas.
For like an hour and a half.
I love my Christmas movies. The thing is, I was never a huge Christmas fan until I moved to this country. Wow, man, I come from a divorced family. Like people, I like Thanksgiving now more too, because people don't understand, like, holidays back home, and I know I'm always like, I was beat up as a kid and this happened, but it does suck, man, when you have to spend half your holiday one place, pick up and drive somewhere else. Now, I know everybody has to do that these days. And, you know,
The
modern family. But it just, it's when I went around people that had, like, Christmases and they didn't have to go anywhere. It was like, that sounds fun. So when I moved to England, it was more like that. Mm-hmm. Like, we go one place and everybody stays where they are for, like, a week. Aside from me. I'm always the one that can do, like, 3 days of it. And I go stir crazy. I'm like, I gotta go. I gotta go back to work, guys. And they always laugh, but they know why it is, because I'm not used to having that. But it's lovely. Like, it's just absolutely lovely. And it's there's so many good traditions here and things. I mean, and then there's mince pies. And
I got to get you some of my mum's mince pies.
Oh, my God. I love mince pies. They're so good. I eat so many mince pies.
I know. But, yeah, I could totally see this going into a top Christmas movie.
I would hope so. And that's kind of my final thoughts on it. Like, I know, listen, the balance is not perfect on this one. And that's what we were trying to point out, because those are the things as filmmakers you can go through and start correcting in your head. That's the only reason we do all this, guys. Like, it's not to say, it's Zack Snyder, it's still hell of talented guy.
You know what I mean?
Like, but we have to be, we're creating our own art, and so this is how we do
everyone
the process.
Everyone has their vision, their way of looking at things.
And this one, I mean, I love the concept, the zombie Christmas, you know, musical. The problem is, like, when I watched it, it's like, oh man, that's so hard to balance.
It's a lot of juggling.
It's a lot of juggling. So does that work? Maybe it works. Maybe it doesn't.
I think they, like, you know, not an A plus, but fuck, man, A minus, I think.
Certainly.
You know, they.
That's what I mean. Add it to your list. If you have horror films in your, if you have a horror film or a musical in your Christmas list, and you are of the age where you don't have like 10-year-old kids around, then put this on there.
Yes, I will be recommending this to a bunch of friends.
Adults, like any adult list for Christmas list, put this on there. You know what I mean? It's a really good one. So other than that, though, that's all the comments I had. Thank you so much for listening through everything. As I said, we just had lots to cover today. We will have another episode next week with, I think, Ed, you want to do Dr. Sleep?
We could do, yes. It's one that I've been kind of on the fence about watching, but if we did that...
Why don't we? Because I didn't add that to our What Have You Seen This Week, because that would have been another conversation. The only thing I will mention is for those of you who are, you know, iffy about your horror... It's a 2.5-hour movie for my wife, who was very iffy about the horror that she likes.
Yeah.
And she was wide awake through the whole thing.
She really dug it.
She dug it.
Okay.
So there is going to be people. That doesn't mean everybody's going to dig it. It just means there are people out there.
I like Ewan McGregor as well, and I haven't really seen him in a film for a while. So.
Well, and it's the sequel to The Shining. It is a sequel. Like, it didn't at first. I was like, I'm not so sure how much of a sequel this really is, and it really is.
He's playing
like,
Danny, right?
Yeah, he's Danny. So, yeah, I mean, that's what I meant. I thought, is it just Danny, what he does? Like, no, this is all, like, really wrapped up well. Mm. So, anywho, watch it. And there's a director's cut on Prime, too, if you want to watch the longer one. And then maybe next week we'll do the podcast on it, yeah?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, my good man. Well, thank you all for listening. Another long one to keep you going through those cold winter nights or driving in your car, wherever you listen to this crazy podcast. But thank you so much, as always. Please put comments in the comment section. I said we had Paul Suter. Thank you so much. One of my good buddies from law school and from my training days and a wonderful human being. I'm talking about his love for Denis Villeneuve. And I totally hear you, Paul. Like, the guy is... on fire right now. But that's the stuff I like to say, you know, and have some conversation, ask questions if you want to. And as always, guys, please remember it is Christmas season, so give us a great Christmas present and like, share, and subscribe to this podcast. All right, we'll check you all next time. And Merry Christmas.
What was I thinking? This isn't Disney. I'm way off script and losing the plot. Things don't work out that way. I'm not McConaughey turning the charm on, calling the shots. If this was a movie, maybe she would be willing to share my world. I'm starting to realize sometimes the nice guys don't always get the girl. 'Cause no one ever